What you watch depends on what kind of mood you're in. Sometimes you're craving comedies like Friends or South Park, and sometimes you're more into dramas like HBO's Succession and House of the Dragon. There's also cooking shows like Chopped and Beat Bobby Flay, and even movies like The Lord of the Rings and Shazam! Fury of the Gods. Well, Max is the streaming destination that has the best of entertainment for whatever mood you're in anytime. And plans start at as little as $9.99 a month. Max, the one to watch. Subscription required. Visit max.com.
T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's S-E-E-W-H-Y.
It's Friday. What more can we ask? It's Friday with much anticipated men's semifinal at the French Open, a champion at the Women's College World Series, a Stanley Cup final that features history, that happening last night. Of course, Major League Baseball for the weekend as well. And yes, tonight, another installment of the NBA Finals. So there's a lot happening in the world of sports on this now June 9th. Did I mention it's Friday? Oh, yeah. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. And we'd love to know where you are and how you're listening. Some of you are finding out that you've got a lot of other people that are listening on that same station in your area. So this is great. We've gotten hundreds of responses throughout the show already with 1 hour to go. So whether it's on Twitter, A-Law Radio, I put a post up there, and also on our Facebook page, we love to gauge our audience and know how it is that you tune in. Many of you, as in probably half of the ones we've heard from, are listening on apps or via streaming service. Few of you listening on satellite, Sirius XM, and a lot of you still using our great affiliates, which is awesome too. And honestly, a lot of the apps, they tap into our affiliates. And so even if you're not in that part of the country, you're able to check in via the Odyssey app or TuneIn Radio app or the iHeart Radio app. So make sure you find us either Twitter or Facebook on what is now a feel-good, free-for-all, freaky, funky Friday. I could think of some other F words, but I got to be careful. yeah, cool to talk to so many of you. And as I mentioned just before the top of the hour, we are 3 hours away from the match between Novak Djokovic and his quest for Grand Slam singles title number 23 and world number one Carlos Alcaraz, who's all of 20 years old. And for all of the preview and everything else, the buzz at Roland Garros, we are pleased to welcome our longtime friend and tennis insider, Christopher Clary, who spent 30 plus years at the New York Times and is now branching out on his own, because why not? And we'll hear a little bit about his latest adventures. But Christopher, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks so much for a couple of minutes in Paris.
Amy, it's always a pleasure. Yeah.
I know that the buzz is real. We can feel it even here in the United States. So set the stage for us, please. What's it like as we're building toward the semifinal between Novak and Carlos?
Yeah, it's crazy, Amy, thinking about it, because for so many years, you know, in men's tennis, it's all been about sort of the big three and when's Federer going to play Nadal, or when's Nadal going to play Djokovic, or when's Djokovic going to play Federer? Well, obviously, this is a different situation now. We got a young guy, 20 years old, Carlos Alcaraz, won the U.S. Open last year. Age 19, he's from Spain. He plays kind of like a hybrid of all the big three. He's got all different skill sets that those guys possessed. He's a real kind of a smiling assassin. He's an upbeat kind of positive energy guy, but there's a lot of venom in his shots. Loves to drop shot, loves to take risks, come to net, can kill you from the baseline, can also kind of beat you a lot of different ways. And so this is the match, I think, that because of Djokovic's enduring success and having just won the Australian Open in January and, you know, winning Wimbledon last year and still being a huge factor in the game, he is probably the most, you know, successful big three guy left at the moment, with Nadal right out and Federer retired. So this is the next generation, old generation match everybody's been wanting to see for over a year now, and they haven't played. So this is finally the chance, and it's going to come, you know, not in a final, but pretty close to one in the semis later today.
When Novak says he has extra motivation, he told us that in January. What's he referring to? What's he talking about?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Federer and Nadal kept the whole Grand Slam record at arm's length a little bit. maybe because they knew how good Novak is and how much he wanted it. But Novak has not hidden his ambition on this at all. He wants the record to himself. It's one of the main reasons that he's playing. He and Nadal are tied at 22. Nadal is missing the French Open for the first time in 20 years, probably isn't going to come back at the same level. So Novak knows the new generation is rising, led by Alcaraz, and he wants that record before they do. And so this is one of his probably last really, really good chances to do it. And catching Carlos in his one of his first major matches and having a chance to use all his best of five set experience. He is 36, but he's, I think, a relatively young 36 in terms of how his body operates. So I think Novak wants that record, and he wants, you know, all the numbers in his favor when the career is over. And so this is one of the ways to do that, by winning today's match.
As I was thinking about a French Open without Rafael Nadal and also the void, I feel it as a fan without Roger Federer. So two now of the big three in the era that you just spoke of. It reminded me of golf in the wake of Tiger Woods, when it really became evident that he, I know he won the Masters a couple years ago, but isn't going to be the same force and the same presence on the PGA Tour at the majors that he was for so long. How does it feel without Rafa and without Roger these last few months?
You know, it is definitely a different world because everything was, you know, geared around those guys and their matchups. I think it was a surprise to me, especially with Nadal at the French Open. I mean, they got a statue of the guy as you walk in the entrance. I mean, and he's Spanish, not French. So that just tells you how kind of irresistible he's been and how you just couldn't fight the legacy that he was creating with 14 victories in one tournament like this at a major. And yet, you know, we talked a lot about it before the tournament, but I think just the charisma and the novelty of Alcaraz and the excitement about his game has really filled some of that void, to be honest. I mean, Carlos is also from Spain. He's a guy who's very appealing to watch. People that are casual tennis fans or just general sports fans ought to watch this guy and just sort of see what he can bring to the equation because it's quite spectacular. But I think there's been a lot of focus on him, and he's sort of filled those major match, major court roles that Rafa was filling before. So the void has not been as big as I would have expected for that reason, I think.
Good. Christopher Cleary is with us from Paris, getting set for that semifinal between Novak and the smiling assassin, 20-year-old Carlos Alcaraz. Quite a nickname for a guy who's 20 years old. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. What's the latest on Rafael Nadal's health, Christopher? Because it's hard, kind of like Roger. Didn't really get a chance to say goodbye when he was still healthy. Is that going to be the case with Rafa too?
You know, much as I don't like to say it, I think, you know, the odds are pointing that direction, probably because of just, you know, the persistence that Nadal has and sort of the love of competition. And I don't know if he's clinging by his fingernails just to, you know, win another title. I just think he genuinely has it in his DNA just to enjoy the fight, enjoy the competition. You can see it in the way he's played the game over 20 years. I mean, he really is one of those, you know, Jordan-esque, you know, point-by-point, moment-by-moment kind of competitors. And I think a lot of his joy in what he does, Andy, comes from, you know, just the process. He's not so much about holding up the trophy as he is, you know, getting to play the points on the way to the trophy. And that's almost a cliche, but I think in his case it's true. And so I think it's really hard for someone like that to let go of that because I think he really misses that competitive thing. And when he's hurting, you know, it's just another obstacle, but he doesn't mind the obstacles, doesn't mind the suffering. So it's not surprising that he wants to keep playing. I don't think he's going to have the same kind of success. It looked to me like, you know, this latest round of injuries, he'd lost a step at least in terms of his lateral movement. Always been an explosive mover, right. Amazing mover, but he definitely had lost some speed, and he was struggling to beat guys in the last few months before this latest injury break. And he's had a series of things happen to his body over his whole career, but the pace is accelerating, and kind of the breadth of the injuries and where they're hitting him has been accelerating too. And this latest injury was suffered in Australia back in January, lost in the second round to Mackie McDonald, American player. And he basically tore a psoas muscle, you know, in his hip area. And thought he could heal it and just letting it rest didn't work. So he's gone in for, I think it's his first, you know, real surgery he's had in his career, believe it or not, despite all the injuries. And so he just did that about a week or two ago when he announced his withdrawal from the French Open. So we just don't know. I mean, say it's a 5-month recovery process. He's 37 years old now. It's hard to see a whole lot of upside, but, you know, people have lost a lot of money counting out Rafa Nadal over the years, so let me not be the next one.
You already have The Master, written about Roger Federer. It was a New York Times bestseller. Love the book, by the way. And now, according to your Twitter, I haven't had a chance to ask you about this, you're writing The Warrior on Rafael Nadal. How much does it change when you don't actually know what happens next with him?
You know, it is funny, Amy, because it is sort of the same situation I was in when I started writing the book on Federer. I mean, I'm in no way trying to usher anybody out the door in literary fashion here, but it's just I feel like the main body of work for Roger was done when I started doing the book, and it's hard not to feel that the main body of work is done for Nadal at this point. So I think it's a good moment to get to work and try to sum up a lot of the things that have made him great over the years and try to explore some other things as well. And it's the reason I left the Times after 30 plus years was that this book opportunity came along, and I'm at a stage where I kind of had to choose, and I feel like I'm getting a lot out of these the books, and I'm getting a lot out of that process. So I really wanted to do it again, and this was the way to do it. But it's hard to leave after 32 years.
Sure.
Very hard.
So are you having fun so far, though, being on your own and being a full-time author?
Best part about writing a book, Amy, is the research. It's the writing part that's the nasty part.
Christopher Clary is with us from Paris. Well, we appreciate you joining us for a couple of minutes. Let me ask you about the American presence in Paris. Where are the Americans?
The American, players have had a bit of an uptick in some ways, especially on the men's side. There have been some good successes. Taylor Fritz is in the top 10 on the men's side, has done well. Francis Tiafoe, people might remember, got to the semifinals of the U.S. Open last year, created a lot of buzz, lost to Alcaraz in a great five-set match, and has won some titles this year as well, too. He's a very dynamic player. But these young guys led by Alcaraz, are just a little bit of cut above the Americans at the moment, so it's hard for them to go too deep. Didn't see much of them in the second week of the French Open. On the women's side, Coco Gauff has done very well, but has hit a bit of a glass ceiling at the top. Hasn't been able to really win the biggest matches against the very top-ranked players, and she lost in the quarters here to Iga Świątek, she's never beaten, the number one player from Poland. So there's some little holes, not big holes, but little holes in Coco's game. And she's only 19, so not writing her off by any means, but she hasn't been able to make that big leap to the very, very top of the game. Was a French Open finalist last year, but lost that final pretty easy. Jessica Pegula, a great tennis player, top five in the world, hasn't been able to go super deep at the majors either. So the American players are strong, but they're not as strong at the very top as they've been in the past right now. I think that's the way to sum it up.
How dominant is Iga? Because she's managed to stay on top. Is this a player that you think could put together an extended run?
She was very dominant last year, won a whole bunch of titles and had number one ranking sewed up almost by double the points of her closest pursuer. Not so much the case in recent months. It's been more of a three-way operation with Aryna Sabalenka and Elena Rybakina from Kazakhstan and Iga. But Rybakina got sick here, couldn't finish the tournament. Sabalenka lost a crazy match yesterday, 3 hours plus, in the semifinals to Karolina Muchova, who's a very talented Czech player, kind of coming into her own here. And Iga is sort of money on clay. That's her happy place, her best surface. And I think she was the favorite coming in, and she's still very much the favorite going into the final. But Muchova's very talented, could make it hard for her.
I've been watching that match, actually. They replay him on the Tennis Channel overnight, so we've been able to see him during the week while we're here hosting our show. So from this point, it's on to Wimbledon, right? When you think about tennis, and it kind of feels wide open, other than Novak, and we'll see what happens, it feels kind of wide open. How healthy is the game of tennis right now, do you think, across the board, globally?
Well, the women's side, I think there's a little concern just because there's been so much turnover at the top. I mean, you've had these superstars get created, people like Naomi Osaka, of course, and then Ash Barty from Australia, who was number one, won Wimbledon. And then they just haven't stayed at the top. They've, in Naomi's case, she took a break from the game, needed some mental break from the sport, now is pregnant, going to give birth later this summer, intends to return to the tour, but not until probably the new year. So that's a huge hole in the game. Serena retiring last year. Venus Williams is coming back in her early 40s to play Wimbledon again, it looks like. She's on the grass getting ready. But there's been a real problem with kind of having staying power at the top. And much as the quality of tennis with Sabalenka and Świątek and Rybakina has been excellent this year, some great matchups, I'm not sure it really breaks out personality-wise to a wider public yet. They need years to create that. On the men's side, I got to say, amazingly, when you've lost the big three because of the rise of Alcaraz and the meteoric rise of Alcaraz and the way he plays, I think there's a much more upside there at the moment probably than the women's game just in terms of the general audience. But we'll see how it all plays out.
Any idea how this match might go?
Well, I had an interesting conversation with an old Aussie wise man named Paul McNamee, who was a great number one player in the world in doubles and knows a lot about clay court tennis. And he basically, his theory is, the best shot on the court will win on clay because of the fact you have to earn all the points. And he thinks, Novak and Carlos, the best shot on the court is the Alcaraz forehand. So that's the thing to watch. Carlos can hit huge power with it. Can also hit very hard to read drop shots. He is 20 years old, full of energy, enthusiasm, talent. Novak's 36, hasn't played his best tennis this year since Australia. So, you know, just on paper, you got to give Carlos the edge, just based on level of play and sort of the rise and fall of things. And yet, something inside my head is I cannot pick against Novak entirely because the guy's just best of five. He's such a good adapter. He's such a good tactician now. He's still remarkably fit for his age.
Sure.
I'm going to go with Alcaraz just because I feel like, you know, just what I said before, kind of the weight of the years and the momentum of the game. But if he doesn't play a great match, he's going to lose.
Mm. I always enjoy seeing history. And if this is what we have left of the big three, then I got to be rooting for Novak to get that record that he so desires with the extra motivation. All right. You can find Christopher on Twitter at Christoph Clary, C-H-R-I-S-T-O-P-H, and then Clary. And no longer with the New York Times, but leaving of his own accord to become a full-time author and are still our favorite correspondent when it comes to the international events. It's always great to catch up with you. We look forward to it in a couple of months for Wimbledon.
Amy, thanks. It's been so much fun talking to you over the years. Hope we can keep doing it.
We absolutely will. Thank you so much, Christopher. It's good to talk to him in Paris. I tell him this, so it's not like I'm talking behind his back. But he's one of my favorites because I always learn something from him and because he's so intelligent, too, the way that he talks about tennis and appeals to me. Really exciting. And if I was in his shoes, I'd be scared to death. But he sounds very even keel. Made the decision to leave what was his base, right? His foundation. His source after 30 plus years in one place. I think I've been in a place a long time in 11 years, but that's a lot. So he's awesome and definitely would recommend the book on Federer. If you're a tennis fan or you love Roger Federer, it's called The Master and it's a New York Times bestseller. Got a new one coming out on Nadal very soon and says the research is the fun part. Not so much the writing. That's the nasty part. Cool to get a peek inside his brain a little bit. All right, coming up, Florida, Las Vegas, Stanley Cup Final, history, and the Golden Knights were minutes away from taking a 3-0 lead. Matthew Tkachuk. Every single time they need something, Tkachuk steps up to the plate. Oh, wait, that's a different sport. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports.
Your points are worth more than you think. This first-class flight to Tokyo, you can book it in your credit card portal for 1.4 million points. Yowzers. With PointMe, you could redeem just 120,000 points for that same flight. Now that's more like it. PointMe gets you 6 to 12 times the value for your points. Your credit card points are worth more than you think. PointMe. Better flights, fewer points.
Get started today at point.me. That's point.me.
The finals are here, and the biggest assist is happening off the court. BetQL has the best sportsbook deals, bonus offers, and exclusive access to risk-free bets, giving you more bang for your basketball buck. Visit BetQL to unlock special offers and finish the season on a winning note. Whether you're riding with the Joker in Denver or playoff Jimmy in Miami, BetQL's bonus offers can be the alley to your sports betting oop. Go to BetQL.com/hoops to take advantage of these exclusive offers. That's BetQL.com/hoops.
Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
On his way to the ice, it's Verhaeghe over on the far side. It was Haig trying to clear. Barkov kept it in. Verhaeghe, right point backhand, long shot, and a save made by Hill. The turnaround follow-up from Bennett blocked. Ekblad near point. Looks across. Big drive, Verhaeghe. The rebound, they score, and it's Matthew Tkachuk on the doorstep, and this game is tied at two with 2:13 to play in regulation time.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Every single time, the Panthers need, as in desperately need, a big goal, Matthew Tkachuk. Matthew Tkachuk, didn't he have three game winners in the last series? I mean, he's who even knows? He's got 11 goals now. I shouldn't say it like that. Who even knows? There was one of these series in which he had three game winners. Just a guy who, like a Jimmy Butler, if we're comparing these South Florida teams, is willing to step into the fire and set a tone for his team. And he has been incredible in terms of that Johnny on the spot type of quality. You need it. You got to have it. Matthew Tkachuk is your guy. Chucky, as they call him. 11th goal of this postseason. And it looked like the Golden Knights were headed for a 3-0 series lead. They were 2 minutes and 15 seconds away from that 3-0 series lead until Matthew Tkachuk tied it up. You hear it with Doug Plagans on Panthers radio, sending them into sudden death overtime.
Verhage nearly was able to take that away, tried to nudge it out front of the net, but the Golden Knights move it forward. Now it's Bennett back in. Bennett up the near side, looks across, Verhage high slide shot. He scores! Connor Verhage, the overtime winner here in game three. The Panthers take it 3-2 the final.
Hanging around, hanging around. Carter Verhage flops a nut straight. Pay that man his money. Overtime winner for Carter Verhage.
And the Panthers cut the series deficit in half. They take it 3-2 in overtime. And now they'll have a chance on home ice to even the series on Saturday night in game four.
I really don't know what to say. Probably just the gutsiest win I've ever been a part of. So I'm very proud of the team. And we're not done yet.
Matthew Tkachuk, doesn't he sound a lot like Jimmy Butler? We're going to win the next game. We're not done yet. We're going to advance. I mean, that's the unwavering confidence on Sportsnet.
Damn right.
What did Jimmy Butler tell us about the team and why they're so resilient? It's the I don't give a damn factor. That's it. We don't care. We don't care what people think. We don't care what people say. We only care about the guys in the locker room and our coaching staff. And it's the I don't give a damn factor. We don't care who steps up, who gets all the attention, who scores, who does this, who does that. We just want to win.
Drink wine, play spades, and dominoes.
Matthew Tkachuk on Sportsnet, as I said, he had the game-tying goal late in the third, and then Carter Verhage, who actually assisted on Kachuk's goal, has his fourth career playoff overtime goal, and it was sweet. It was one of those that you recognize kind of the wisdom in what people say about sudden death overtime, which is that every single shot is an opportunity. No matter what, you just put the puck on net because you never know what's going to happen. And it was a shot from Carter that comes maybe 6 feet inside the blue line. So it was straight up top, and it was the perfect angle. It goes over the glove, so over the wrist of Aiden Hill. And because of how it hit the post, it banged into the back of the net. And as I said this earlier, it reminded me of football and field goals and how sometimes you get the perfect spin and the ball caroms off the upright and through. Other times, like we hear it in hockey a lot, it clangs off the post. Well, this one was the perfect angle. It went off the post into the back of the net. And so Carter, not only with the big assist late in game in period three, but also the overtime winner.
It was a huge goal, the tying goal. And we've been so good in overtime. And I think Matthew made a great play. I mean, just got open and he's so good around the net. And just try and get the puck to him there and made a great play. And yeah, I mean, to win an overtime in front of our home fans, it gives us a little bit of momentum, and you saw it right from the start in the first period. I think we fed off our home crowd a little bit, and we love playing at home.
Now, remember, the Golden Knights had set a record for most goals in a Stanley Cup final through the first two games. They had 5 in the opener and then 7 in game number 2. The fact that Sergei Bobrovsky only had to come up with 25 saves, I think, speaks volumes about not just the defense in front of him, but the fact that the Panthers were able to limit, and by limit, recognize who they're playing, limit the opportunities for the Golden Knights. So a couple of things. The Knights scored both their goals on power plays. They were 2-for-6 with the man advantage. Panthers were 0-for-5, so there's an area where they really could use a little boost. But also, Golden Knights started overtime with a power play. So that's the hole the Panthers put themselves in. They had to start sudden death with this idea, of course, that the Golden Knights had already had two power play goals, and they're so relentless in those opportunities. They have a ton of guys who can hurt you, Eichel and Marchessault and Stone, and just to get through that power play to start sudden death, to me, felt like this. You almost feel it if you're watching or listening to sudden death. It was like, man, that was the first major hurdle. And after that, a lot more freedom for them to be able to go back to what they've been doing. But yeah, Sergei Bobrovsky says really the biggest difference was the defense in front of them. And so just had the 25 saves. To me, again, that speaks volumes about how the Golden Knights didn't have as many opportunities. Bruce Cassidy admits we didn't take advantage of the ones we had.
I hope it leaves a sour taste in your mouth, at least for the night. I mean, you know, we had a chance to put the game away. Talk about winning hockey, closing out hockey games, how important it is this time of the year. So I hope they're upset with certain things that transpire. That's okay. It's an emotional game, but not tomorrow. Can't be tomorrow. Get your night's rest and, you know, be ready to, as I said, get better tomorrow. That's been our goal all year, be better in the next game. Turn the page, so we will.
Except these are the Florida Panthers, and just like the Miami Heat, they don't do anything easy. They absolutely do not. It's kind of fun to think about how these 2-8 seeds have at least taken one game, right? So different circumstances, of course. The Miami Heat have now given back that home court advantage to the Denver Nuggets. They've got game number 4 coming up tonight. Why, NBA? Why? The first 3 games, just random. It's almost like a computer spit it out. Or a 5-year-old decided, just taking a crayon and circling a day on a calendar. And now they're going 2 games in 3 days. I don't understand it at all.
Oh, my God.
Is there a Taylor Swift concert that I don't know about? Is that what's happening right now?
Is she still going?
Of course. It's the, shoot, people are going to yell at me if I get it wrong, the Eras Tour, right? It's the Eras Tour.
Something like that.
You're not a Swiftie?
No. I'm not a hater, but I'm not a Swiftie, no. But,
I mean, can you be something other than a Swiftie and a hater? I kind of feel like you can. You can just be blasé about it.
I mean, I'll be honest. I don't like her music. Like, I don't, but...
What? Okay. Well, then... So you're not a Swiftie. You don't like her music, but you're not a hater. You just want to clarify so that there's no piling on of Producer Jay.
Right. I'm not going to go there to the show outside and say, don't go to Taylor Swift. Don't spend the money or tell people not to listen to her.
Who would do that? Who has the energy or the time to do that?
I feel like people might.
Really?
I don't know.
What a waste.
People will definitely criticize music opinions, but, you know, I'm just not for me.
Well,
but
for that reason, you have to come out with my favorite Taylor Swift song after the update. Are you ready?
Yes.
We are never, ever, ever, ever getting back together. That's my favorite.
And we'll hear it next.
Actually, I do really like her original song that put her on the map, which is the song about Tim McGraw, just because I love Tim McGraw. But yeah, my favorite Swiftie song. I'm not a Swiftie either. If that means I wouldn't pay thousands of dollars to go to one of her concerts, yeah, that's what it means. But I do think she's certainly a phenomenon. I mean, she is that. Whether you like her music or you don't, she's now a pop culture icon.
Say.
No doubting that. So back to the original question, is Taylor Swift in Miami this weekend? No, I don't think she plays basketball arenas. That's too small for her.
That's too small, yeah. Honestly.
So at least know that that's not the case. All right, we're asking you, and it's gotten a great response so far. We love it. Where are you listening and how on this freaky, funky Friday that also features payday for us? And I hope payday for you, too. It's a free-for-all, baby. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, on our Facebook page, too. I mean, you're blowing it up. So good to hear from many of you as we head up toward the top of the hour. And we set you free. Fly away on your Friday. There might be something wrong with me. Maybe I'm just excited about the weekend. Also, Producer Jay and I got a gift in a box from a man who we assume is a listener. Okay, first of all, I'm a little freaked out by the gift. Jay is all about it. You should see the grin on his face right now. We're going to let you hear from our gift coming up next. Plus, magical season for Oklahoma softball. The two things have nothing to do with each other. A pickle and softball, nothing to do with each other, but we got time. It's After Hours, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
have had enough, cause like we hadn't seen each other in a month when you said you needed space. What? Then you come around again and say, baby, I miss you and I swear I'm gonna change. Trust me, remember how that lasted for a day? I say I hate you, we break up, you call me, I love you.
After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
How can you not like this song? Ever.
Ever.
Ever. I'm really gonna miss you picking fights. This is my favorite Taylor Swift song. I will confess that I probably don't even know half of them, but this is my favorite. And let me just tell you, when it shuffles through on my... well, whether it's my iPod or my Spotify or whatever else it is, you have to sing out loud. Jay, you have to. Even you.
I
you have to.
I don't like that song.
What if you're the one who offered that we would cover another song when we reach 50,000 followers on our followers or likes or whatever on our Facebook page that we would cover a song? Now, I originally thought Backstreet Boys because I am definitely a BSB groupie, but... maybe we need to do Taylor Swift.
I'd much rather do Backstreet Boys. Like that's okay with me.
Yeah, but you wouldn't let me pick the song.
No, you could pick it. I just didn't want to do. What was the one we?
I wanted that way.
I wanted that way. That was just. It's not my range. Like I said, that one's just a little too soft. I don't know if I could do that one.
Taylor's your range.
Taylor's not.
That song's everybody's range. It's a little bit like the. Oh shoot! What's the song where you're supposed to sing off key? Oh my gosh! You got what I need. Is that Bismarcky?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's the song you're supposed to sing off key, right? We could do that one if you want. But Taylor Swift with We're Never Getting Back Together, you're supposed to just sing it loud and proud and not really care.
Maybe a different Taylor one?
Why? That's my favorite.
Maybe. Uh-oh. I'll think about it.
Is it Strike a Chord?
No. Absolutely not.
Methinks he doth protesteth too much. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Maybe at some point we'll do a show question asking people which song we should cover. But we got to get to the 50,000 on our Facebook page first. We still got a ways to go. We're at 44 now, I think. We are hearing from so many of you tonight, this morning, about where and how you're listening. It's awesome. I'm going to try to get to some more before the top of the hour, but I can't make a ton of promises. I just know all over the country, lots of apps. We've even had a couple from the British Isles, a bunch from Canada. Many of you, of course, dealing with the wildfires, so we're thinking of you. So a lot of people that tune into our show, and then many more via the podcast, and we're just so thankful. I'm so thankful. I won't speak for Jay. I'm so thankful that you make us a part of your daily routine, whether it's middle of the night or first thing in the morning, you're working out, you're driving, you're getting home from work. Maybe you just listen because you have insomnia, or maybe, just maybe, you're up because you want to be, because you want to listen to the show. So however it is, we know we have a wide range of not just regions, sports fans. We certainly have a wide range when it comes to our affiliates. You're all over the country, AM, FM. And then we recognize that so many of you listen digitally as well. We're just glad to keep you company after hours here on CBS Sports Radio. We were talking about this earlier. Certainly this time of the year, people get pretty excited about the College World Series, and they're into Super Regionals now, and the men. And then the Women's College World Series. But a little bit different buzz this year coming out of Oklahoma City in the Women's College World Series because of the history on the line for Patty Gasso and the Oklahoma Sooners.
Sandercock reading the signs from Edenfield. Lyons crouches in. Here's the pitch. Off speed, high fly ball, left field. Mudge is back on the track at the wall, leaping up. It is gone. Lyons leaves the yard. Oklahoma has gone back-to-back, and the Sooners have a 2-1 lead. First it was Sydney Sanders, now it's Grace Lyons, and the Sooners have gone in front. 2-1 Oklahoma, top of the fifth inning.
And Florida State had a brief lead, but Oklahoma, they got a lot of power and so many All-Americans pretty much at every position, tracking a 53rd win in a row, but more importantly, closing in on their third consecutive Women's College World Series championship.
Ball checks the wristband for the sign. She's ready. Now the windup, the 2-2 pitch to the plate. Swing and a miss, strike three. It's over. It's a three-peat for Oklahoma in 2023. The Sooners sweep Florida State. And for a third consecutive year, the Oklahoma Sooners are Women's College World Series champions.
Ryan Radke on Westwood One with the final call. So a two-game sweep over Florida State. It's best of three, but the Seminoles unable to take that game off the Sooners and to end what is a record win streak. So I mentioned 53 wins in a row. Listen to this. 61-1 this season. Best record in women's college softball history. And it results in not just a third consecutive title, but seven overall for Coach Patty Gasso, who gets really emotional. And honestly, since I know Patty personally, she keeps a very calm demeanor and she's real tough. She's got that straight face, but when the work is done, she is someone who lets all that emotion come out.
I don't know how to explain it. I just can tell you the way I feel right now is free because the expectation is overwhelming. The pressure is overwhelming, and they all have each other to laugh with. I'm standing here by myself, so that's why you're hearing my voice do this. I know what they're feeling. I know what I'm feeling, and it's very difficult. It's extremely rewarding, but like I just want to go to Costco and shop and no one care that I'm there. And they feel the same. You know, it's just, it's so crazy to see how our lives have changed. And the fans in Oklahoma are absolutely fantastic. But it starts to feel like you're getting smothered a little bit because everybody wants something and everybody, and I heard them talking about it. It's for all of us. It's different. It's not something I just want to coach, you know, I want to just be a regular, and then just all of a sudden your life isn't regular anymore.
Something that we talked about early on in the fall is the expectations from the outside of what people expect of us, what fans, but even like opposition, what they expect of us and what they're trying to kind of make us think or see on social media. And the message off the bat was, eyes are on our circle. We're going to keep focusing on what we do every single day. It doesn't matter what the outside has to say. We're going to do the little things. We're going to keep grinding, as these players are saying. It's a grind. And we worked so hard to create a cohesive circle to where the outside wasn't that big of an impact on us and our mindset. And I think from day one, we had to do that, and we had to continue that until now. And even hearing, you know, some things now of people trying to get in our circle. The focus is eyes on each other and eyes up to keep it as simple as possible. And I think that allowed us to have so much fun just celebrating each other's wins, the little things, because just this team is so unique but so awesome and so great to be a part of.
And historic as well. Grace Lyons, who is one of the seniors, had the solo home run in the fifth that put the Sooners in front. Again, Ryan Radke with the calls on Westwood One. And Patty Gasso. And again, I know her. I worked with her when I was in Oklahoma much earlier in her career. But even then, you knew the focus and the toughness. She has very high expectations. So it's interesting that she's talking about them because she sets the expectations for her team. And it's because she believes in them. And she has the highest expectations because she knows who they are. And not only does she recruit talent, but she recruits character. That's something that's really important to her. And you can hear it with Grace, eyes up. That's one of their mantras, is eyes up, eyes on each other and eyes up. And it's a culture like what you would think about with, I mean, we talk about heat culture, for instance, and what does that mean? But any type of culture where it's an established foundation and there's consistency and there's success. And this reminds me, the success of OU women's softball reminds me a lot of, UConn women's basketball and how that foundation was built finally, and it becomes this machine where you have the best opportunities when it comes to recruiting and the facilities. They pay for themselves and the fans are there. And yes, it does dovetail into extremely high expectations, but clearly the Sooners are capable of meeting that. And they still have five returning All-Americans. So they lose three seniors, but they've got five returning All-Americans. Absolutely expect them to be a contender again next year. Patty's deserves all the attention that she gets. And as I say, she is tough. She's one of those that sets a tone, right? So in college, a lot of times it's the coaches who set the tone. But also knowing her, she's kind, she's gracious, she's so much about family. She's got grandkids now. I remember when her kids were young. And she really is about faith and about family. She wants them to have quote-unquote normal lives too, right? She doesn't expect them to give everything they've got. She understands priorities and just, yeah, I'm so happy for her because I know who she is and what she stands for and what she's all about. And she's done it the right way. So yeah, for Florida State, it's one of those, hey, thanks for playing type of things, but this was Oklahoma season. And Lonnie Alameda says, hey, we're not going to hang our heads.
First off, congratulations to OU. They're just firing on all cylinders. It's pretty cool. I think a lot of people are texting me throughout, you know, like a lot of people don't like that one team's winning all the time. And, you know, I get a little vibe sometimes of like, you know, take down the machine. And we gave our best for that. But they're really good. And Oklahoma does a really good job. And they do a good job in all cylinders from, you know, recruiting to developing to meeting the NIL to development of program and team. And it's really an honor to compete against the highest level.
Congratulations to Florida State for getting there, but big props and just a huge, huge admiration for Patty Gasso and now a 61-1 record and a third straight softball crown. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio, so we're not going to get to a lot of where and how you're listening, but, oh, gosh, just go check our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, and our Facebook page. And we got a gift. We want to end our work week with this. We got a gift. I have no idea why someone created a yodeling pickle, but Jay would like to send us out on this Friday morning with yodels from a pickle. It's a pickle. No, seriously, it's a pickle. Why? Why is it a pickle?
It's beautiful.
But why is it a pickle?
Why not?
Steve sent us a note that said, you guys work so hard. You're so busy. Wait, I need some more yodeling pickle. Come on. You work so hard. You're so busy. Long hours, tough hours. We want you to smile and laugh over this pickle. Are you kidding? It's a yodeling pickle. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!